Yeah, so what? You know a lot about animals, so answer me this. What do animals do when humans invade their habitats? They die out, or end up in zoos like this one. Okay, I'll give you that some do. But what about all the other animals that don't die out or end up in zoos? I'm not following, she said. Mike's constant gaze was beginning to make her feel hot. She felt her cheeks throbbing and wondered when he was going to look away. As if sensing her discomfort, he broke his stare momentarily before continuing with the point he was trying to make. I mean animals like rats, birds, cats, rabbits, even bears. They're all around us, aren't they? You can't go anywhere in the city without a pigeon eyeing you up for food. In America, bears and raccoons come right out into the streets and raid people's bins. So do foxes in this country. Annalisa cleared her throat irritably. What's your point? My point is that animals adapt. When things change for them, they don't feel sorry for themselves, they just deal with it. So you're saying that we need to, what, just deal with it? Like rabbits? Exactly. Are we so arrogant that when our cushy way of life is threatened, we'd rather just give up than have to adapt and survive? Every other species on Earth has had to do it because of us, so why can't we? Mike cleared his throat and rubbed at his face. Look, I don't know what lies ahead of us. I'm guessing it's not going to be nice or easy in any way, but I'm not about to lie down and take it without a fight. Whatever has happened is bad, really bad, but it's only the end of the world if we let it be. People have died, yes, but as long as there's a few of us left, then we owe it to the human race to survive. If we don't, then there is no more human race. Annalisa frowned at him. You're not going to shout freedom at me, are you? Mike laughed. I haven't gone all Braveheart yet, but that's the mentality we need. And that film just proves my point that when people are up against it, they fight. Maybe this thing isn't as big as we fear, but we need to prepare ourselves in case it is. Maybe you're right, she said. Can we just get out of here for now, though? I don't want to look at a dead body again for at least the rest of the day. Fair enough. Come on, everyone is still in the staff room. We were going to start planning what to do next. In the staff room, everyone was gathered at the pool table. Shawcross was starting a meeting. From the way he was gesticulating, the man thought he was Winston Churchill. Or Hitler. The phones are still not working, he said. All of the computers in this office are security protected, and nobody knows the passwords. Ripley Hall is off limits, and we have no idea what the situation is in nearby towns. To say the situation is perilous is an understatement. Our only hope at this point is to secure rescue. How? Greg asked. By following my suggestion of starting a signal fire. Bad idea, said Annalisa. I already told you that. What if the fire attracts the infected, or people that want to take what we have? You may be correct, Shawcross admitted. But what other choice do we have, really? We have no food beyond what lies on this table, and I'm sure it's only a matter of time until we lose power, and perhaps even water. If you don't agree with a signal fire, then we could head down for the staff car park behind the manor house, or even head down the hill via the cable cars. We can cut through the woods right into the nearest town. The towns won't be safe, she said. Well, neither is here. We have to leave. Wait a minute, said Mike. Isn't this a theme park? What? This place is a theme park and zoo, right? Shawcross shrugged. What's your point? My point is that there must be a burger bar or restaurant with supplies to last us a little while longer. Annalisa nodded. He's right. In fact, I think there's a couple of them. There's a burger place in the zoo and a pub and eatery in the theme park. We should explore what we have before we start looking elsewhere. Now, said Shawcross, raising a hand. Regardless of how many supplies we can find, we will, at some point, run out. We need rescue. But what if we don't run out? Said Annalisa. Mike folded his arms and looked curious. What do you mean? I mean that the zoo is partly self-sustaining. Bradley was telling me about how they produce much of the animals' feed in a greenhouse in the woods, and that they also have a small plot of vegetable gardens. If we find where those are, then we might be able to grow our own food. And we can eat the animals, said Alan. Annalisa didn't like the thought of that, but she knew it made sense. If things get that desperate, then yes, I suppose so. But even better, the petting zoo has chickens and a pair of cows. We can get eggs and milk.
This is absurd, said Shawcross. We need rescue, not a bloody community project.
Yes, we do need rescue, Annalisa admitted. But we won't get it by throwing our lives away. We can keep a lookout for help. We're 500 feet in the air. But if help is a far way off, then we need to make preparations now rather than later. We need to prepare for the worst.
Shawcross shook his head. You're wrong. I think...
Annalisa cut him off.
Maybe I am wrong, but maybe so are you. You're not in charge here, Shawcross, not anymore. These people can make their own decisions.
Of course they can. We're just talking here, Anna. No need to get upset. I'm sure we'll come up with the best decision available.
Annalisa rolled her eyes at his patronizing tone. I'm not upset, so don't worry yourself. As for coming up with a plan, I think the best option would be to vote.
Well, I'm not sure that I'm happy to vote, said Mike.
Me too, said Alan.
Greg and Michelle also both agreed.
There we have it, Annalisa said. Our first vote is to vote. The second is whether or not we light a signal fire, or whether we dig in and make sure we're set up to survive here.
I vote we stay and prepare, said Mike.
All those in favour? Annalisa asked.
Everyone's hands went up except for Shawcross's.
Annalisa grinned.
Motion carried.
Fine, said Shawcross, stomping across the room. You all just made a very bad decision, but it was yours to make. Just remember that I was against it.
Then he slammed the door and was gone.
You going to be all right, you think? Mike asked her.
Annalisa shrugged her shoulders.
I'm sure he will.
He just needs to get used to the fact that he's not the manager of anything anymore. Like you said, we all need to adapt.
Mike put his fist in the air.
Freedom!
She laughed and punched him on the arm. Then they all heard something that made their blood freeze. The frenzied screeching of the infected. It sounded like hundreds of them. And they were close.
Chapter 25. Annalisa and the others funneled out through the building's entrance and spread out into the courtyard. The screeching of the infected was not coming from the park, that much was clear, but it was nearby.
Come on, she said, rushing off towards the edge of the park, to the area near the cable car station that led to the Rainforest Cafe below. I think it's coming from over there.
Then we should probably run the opposite way, said Greg. His sleeves were rolled up, showing how skinny his arms were.
We need to know if we're in danger, said Mike. We need to check it out.
Nobody seemed to like the idea, but nor did anybody argue. If they had to make a run for it, their chances would be better knowing what they were running from.
Annalisa started making her way through the zoo. Everybody else followed. It became clearer and clearer that the infected were nearby, but it was also recognisable that they were not within the grounds of the park.
It's coming from down the hill, said Shawcross.
Annalisa nodded in agreement. She altered her course slightly so that she was heading for the cable car station directly. From there, she would be able to look down at the guest parking area and the Rainforest Cafe. Sure enough, when she reached the station and looked down the hill, she saw hundreds upon hundreds of infected people. But amidst them all, she saw something else that she could barely believe.
No way!
There are uninfected people down there. Look, there's a man standing on top of the cafe. And there, look, another!
Annalisa watched as a man in a long black coat crept around the building below with an old lady in tow. The man on the roof seemed to be running some kind of distraction for them by screaming, shouting, and waving his arms like a maniac.
They're screwed, said Greg. There's no way they'll be able to escape all of those infected. They're going to get totally surrounded and torn apart.
She waved a hand dismissively.
Just wait, she said. They're running some kind of plan. The man on the roof has them all corralled at the front of the building, while the other two are running around the back into the woods.
Well, how are they going to get the man down off the roof? Greg asked. There's no way.
Annalisa had no idea, but Greg's eagerness to count the strangers out was beginning to get on her nerves. The only thing that was clear was that the strangers down below were working together and watching each other's back.
Probably the only reason they're still alive.
Maybe we can run a distraction of our own, Mike suggested, a couple of feet to her left. Try to draw the infected away from them.
No way, Shawcross objected from a few feet away. You'll get us killed. Mike shrugged and looked to Annalisa for her opinion.
He respects my opinion more than Shawcross's.
Unfortunately, she had to agree with Shawcross, however much she did not want to.
We can't risk it, she told Mike. We'll just end up bringing the infected up here.
He didn't put up any argument. He just sighed and let his gaze drift back down to the struggling survivors.
Man, that sucks.
Annalisa watched the stranger in the long black coat enter the woods with the old woman. He reappeared a moment later without her. He seemed to exchange a few words with the man on the roof, and then climbed through a window at the side of the building. The man on the roof continued keeping the infected bunched together at the front. Time went by and nothing happened. Annalisa stood silently by, gazing down at the scene below. Her skin felt tight around her bones and her heart beat too fast. Then something began to happen.
The infected people are heading into the cafe, she said. Look!
The infected were shuffling into the cafe, clambering through the broken windows. After a while, the man stranded on the roof was able to head to the back of the building without any of the infected paying attention. Annalisa watched in amazement as the other man, the one in the black coat, exited the building from a side window and then raced around the back to join his colleague, who was now jumping down off the roof to join him. Within seconds, both men had disappeared into the tree line.
They did it, said Mike. Good for them.
But where are they heading next? Shawcross inquired.
Hopefully they'll make it up here, said Alan, rubbing a hand against his moustache. They'll be safe with us.
If they don't end up leading all of those infected up the hill with them, said Annalisa. We discussed this, and I'm not sure having people joining us is a good idea. There was silence in the group as they digested the possibilities. The truth was that none of them could know for sure what was best. The other group of survivors could have knowledge they didn't, medical supplies, weapons. But they could also be dangerous, insane, or infected. One thing was certain, though. If the other survivors tried to make it up the hill, no one could exactly stop them.
You know what this means, said Greg.
What?
It means that we're surrounded. There are infected people down there in the hundreds. There's another few dozen trapped inside Ripley Hall. It's pretty clear that there's no rescue out there to be had. If there was, then what are those people down there doing running for their lives?
It was a grim realization, made even grimmer when Annalisa spotted another group of survivors running out of the woods below, like ants disturbed from cracks in the mud. This new group of people, running frantically across the car park, contained the two men and the old lady from the cafe. They were all being chased by two infected people that came out of the woods right behind them. The horde from inside the cafe also spotted them running, and had now piled back outside. The group of survivors had nowhere to run. They had no hope.
No hope at all.
But then the group below seemed to have an idea. They altered the angle of their run and began heading for the base of the hill. They seemed to have a destination in mind.
The cable cars!
They sprinted for the station at the foot of the hill, and actually seemed like they were going to make it. The only problem was that they were leaving the old woman behind. As they leapt inside two of the cable cars, sliding the doors shut, the old woman fell beneath the tide of infected people and disappeared.
Jesus, said Mike. Poor old girl.
Annalisa shook her head in horror as she watched the horde of infected surround the two cable cars and begin to rock them violently.
They're going to get ripped apart, Greg said. Those cable cars won't hold for long.
Annalisa glanced around. The upper cable car station was several meters in front of her, adjacent to a large cement platform. The control booth was a small shed, made from concrete and sporting a long glass window. Without telling the others what she was doing, she ran towards it. Mike was the only one who followed her. All of the others stood, staring down the hill in astonishment at what they were seeing. "What are you doing?" Mike asked, entering the station behind her. There were two dormant cable cars, the opposite numbers to the ones at the bottom of the hill. There was also a small console set into a steel podium at the far side of the platform. She hurried over to it.
The park still has power, she said to Mike. If we switch on the cable cars, then those people will climb to the top of the hill.
To safety, said Mike.
Exactly.
Annalisa eyed a small silver key that was inserted into the console. Next to it was a green circular button that said, Start.
You said it would be a bad idea to let people up here.
Annalisa nodded.
I did say that, didn't I?
She turned the key and the cable motors came to life. The carriages began to rattle on their moorings.
You sure about this? Mike asked her. Those people could be dangerous. They could bring the monsters up here with them.
Annalisa looked Mike in the eyes. If we leave them down there to die, then we become the monsters. She pressed the green button on the console that said, Start. Part 3. Death. Chapter 26. Nick craned his neck, trying to get the best look possible at the figure atop the hill. Ominously, the silhouetted stranger stood rooted to the spot, staring down at them as they got closer and closer.
What do you see? Jan asked him.
Not sure. There's someone waiting at the top for us, but I can't make them out. The sun is in my eyes.
I hope they're friendly, Cassie said, staring down at her feet as she sat on the cable car's bench.
Me too. But given what we've been through, they can't be any less friendly than we're used to. They saved us by turning on the cables.
The car continued to climb. The one with Dave and the others inside was right behind. Nick suddenly started to feel like a fish on a hook. If the people on the hill meant harm, then there was nothing they could do to escape. They were being reeled in. 500 feet above the ground and about to encounter a group of strangers in a world that had become very unfamiliar, very dangerous.
We're almost there, Jan said. He was wrenching his large hands nervously.
Nick didn't say anything. He was too tense. In the world that existed only a few days ago, meeting a stranger was no big deal. Now it was monumental. The cable car leveled out at the top of the hill and entered the upper station. There was a man and a woman standing there on the platform, anticipating their approach. They seemed cautious. Nick's cable car rounded the apex and began heading back on itself. For a moment, it felt like their hosts were going to send them all the way back down again, but then he realized that they were just waiting for Dave's cable car to ascend onto the platform too. When both cars were in the station, the motors stopped abruptly.
Stay where you are, said the woman on the platform.
Nick saw that she was rugged yet attractive, probably in her 30s. She wore a thick shirt and Wellington boots, and was appraising them from behind some sort of control column. He put his hands in the air and stood in the open doorway of the cable car.
We're not dangerous.
Nor are we, said the man who stood beside the woman.
Unless we have to be.
Nick knew the man wasn't making a threat. He was just being cautious and making it clear that the newcomers were expected to play nice.
And I intend to play nice. I just want to find somewhere safe and think about my son and wife.
The door to the other cable car opened. Dave stepped out.
Hey, said the woman on the platform. Stay where you are.
Dave carried on approaching, despite the order not to. He waved a hand and laughed heartily.
Don't be afraid, sweetheart. We're grateful for your rescue. My name is Dave, and
I said, stay where you are. Dave took the hint this time and stayed still. He placed his hands out in front of him.
All right, love, whatever you say.
The woman placed her hands on her hips.
I'm nobody's love, and you haven't been rescued yet.
That will be decided in the next 30 seconds.
Dave is going to ruin this for us all, Nick thought, as he watched the woman bristle and take offense.
Several other people appeared on the platform, and Nick counted that their hosts numbered at least 6. All of the strangers carried makeshift weapons.
About the same size as our group.
A ginger-haired man approached the woman in Wellington boots and seemed furious with her.
What the hell have you done, Anna? He shouted. We have no idea who these people are.
We're not dangerous, Nick assured them.
Be quiet,
ordered the ginger man.
There's no need for rudeness, Dave said.
The ginger man stepped forwards, getting up close to Dave. There was a brief stare-off between them.
I don't think you're in any position to discuss etiquette with me, sir. You have arrived on my property, and I will decide how things proceed from here.
You own this place? Dave asked, seemingly impressed.
I am Mr. Shawcross, the manager of Ripley Hall.
Dave huffed.
You're just an employee. You don't own this place any more than I do.
Jan leaned close to Nick.
What is he doing? He's going to get us all kicked right back down this hill.
Nick stepped out of the cable car and took a few steps forward. Look, he said, my companion is being a little rude, but I promise you that we will respect whatever you say. We just want to find somewhere safe. Things have gotten really bad down below. Everywhere is in chaos. The woman in Wellington stared at him. You've seen the towns? Is there any order left at all? None. People are infected with some disease, and there's nothing but chaos everywhere. That's not the worst of it, though. The dead are walking, the woman finished. We know we've had our fair share of encounters. Nick deflated. He hadn't wanted to hear that. So it's not safe here either? The woman shrugged. It's secure, for now.
Great, said Dave, rubbing his hands together. Then we're lucky to have found you.
The woman glowered at Dave and took a few measured breaths.
You seem to have a problem controlling your mouth, sweetheart. Now I want you to take a long look at what you're facing. All of my people have weapons and know how to use them. None of your people have anything except a bad attitude. I'm going to give you one last chance to make a good impression on me, or we're going to send you back down that hill before you have a chance to open your mouths again.
Dave's face scrunched up in a scowl. He went to speak, but Nick cut him off.
We apologize, he said. My name is Nick Adams. I was a phone salesman a few days ago. I had a wife, a son, and a mortgage. Now all I have are the people I'm with and my faith in human nature. We're all desperate and afraid, but I promise you that we're good people. Even Dave here, once you get to know him.
The woman studied Dave and then gave a long appraising look at Nick. Eventually she said, My name is Annalisa. You can call me Anna.
What are you doing? The ginger man shouted.
Making the best of a bad situation, she replied. They're here now. We can't exactly send them back down the hill, can we?
Thank you, Nick said. Just don't make me regret saving your asses, she told him. I don't make a habit of trusting people.
Me either, but I'm glad you made an exception.
Is it okay if we all get out now? She nodded. Everyone got out of the cable cars and formed a huddle on the platform. As soon as they did, the ginger man spotted Jan and Rene.
Those two are convicts, he shouted.
Easy there, brother, Jan said. Me and Rene are cool.
Like hell you are. You need to leave.
Where exactly do you expect us to go?
I don't care, but you're not staying here.
Nick stood in front of Jan and Rene and shook his head. They're good people. They were sprung loose when things got crazy, and they've more than proven their courage since they joined up with us. In fact, Jan has already risked his life for other people and saved my life personally.
None of that means anything to us, the ginger man said. Criminals are not to be trusted.
Come on, Nick pleaded. Have some mercy. He stared at Annalisa, hoping she would continue to show compassion.
I'm sorry, she said. I won't feel safe with a couple of criminals amongst us.
Nick couldn't believe it. Then what are you suggesting?
Lock us up, Jan interrupted.
Annalisa frowned.
What do you mean, lock you up?
I mean that if you feel criminals should be locked up, then put Rene and me somewhere secure and we'll stay there and behave, as long as you feed us. But please don't turn everyone away because of mistakes I made years ago.
Annalisa seemed to consider things. Okay, she eventually said. We'll find some place to put you.
But if you try anything, we'll put you down like dogs.
Jan raised an eyebrow.
Damn, lady. You sure you've never spent any time inside yourself?
She shook her head.
Nope. I'm just a pissed-off vet with no more fucks left to give.
Then I think we understand one another, said Nick.
This is a bad idea, said the ginger man. They could all be criminals for all we know.
Perhaps, she admitted, but right now we're all trying to stay alive against the same threat. I think it's in our best interests to trust one another.
The enemy of my enemy is my friend, said Jan.
She nodded. But sometimes friends become enemies too, so don't cross me.
Well then, Dave said, obviously feeling confident to start speaking again. Are you going to show us around, now that it's been decided we're staying?
The ginger man sighed.
Fine. I'll give you all a tour and find somewhere for your illicit companions to stay.
Annalisa shrugged her shoulders apologetically towards Nick. This friendly soul is Shawcross, by the way.
Shawcross raised an eyebrow at them all. I wish I could say the pleasure was all mine.
Welcome to Ripley Heights.
Chapter 27. Eve was turning on the spot and taking the whole place in.
I can't believe I'm here again, she said. God, the memories.
She pointed at a nearby carousel that had dragons instead of horses.
That's the magic circle. My sister and I used to go on that all the time. And look there,
she pointed at a roller coaster at the edge of the park.
I think that's the Hood, if I remember correctly.
You do, said Shawcross. It's been repainted recently, but it's the same old ride. I take it you visited here as a child?
Lots of times, Eve gushed.
Nick liked her excitement. It was the first positive emotion any of them had felt for days, and it was infectious.
We need to be careful, said Annalisa. We're pretty sure the zoo is safe, but we haven't explored the amusement park yet.
Thank you again for helping us, Nick said. We were doomed otherwise. I just hope you haven't brought all those infected up the hill with you.
I don't think so. They seem to lose interest when they can't see you.
Annalisa nodded.
You noticed that too, huh? So how did you survive the last couple days?
Dave picked us up in his bus. We drove around for a while and then ran out of petrol in the nearby woods. I think luck has more to do with it than anything else.
Dave, the guy that doesn't know when to shut his mouth?
Nick nodded.
That's him. He was pretty much our saviour to begin with, but I've been beginning to change my mind about him since.
Annalisa stopped and looked at him.
He's not going to be a problem, is he?
No, of course not. At least, I don't think so.
She shook her head and started walking again.
Great. What have I let myself in for?
I promise he'll behave, Nick said, but wondered if he could even control such a thing.
Annalisa smiled and folded her arms like a stern yet fair teacher.
I'll just have to trust you then, Nick.
He smiled at her.
The group came to a stop up ahead. They were standing in a midway games area. There were several prize huts like basketball, hook-a-duck, and an Arabian Derby skeetball booth. There was also one of those laser target shooting galleries with animated props. It was strange being at the place of fun in such dire circumstances.
Right, said Shawcross, clapping his hands together and getting everyone's attention. The Big Dog restaurant and pub is just up ahead. We need to start stockpiling supplies and looking for anything of use. I'd say that with the soft furnishings inside Big Dog and the fact that it has cooking facilities, it would make an ideal place for us to situate ourselves while we ride this thing out. I believe there's also a cellar where we can accommodate our less desirable guests.
Jan shook his head and huffed.
Guess I should be used to being in a cell by now.
Is that absolutely necessary? Nick asked. There really aren't any danger.
We had a deal, Annalisa said.
Jan cleared his throat.
Don't sweat it, brother. I agreed to the terms. I'm not backing out.
It may only be temporary, Annalisa suggested, just while we get used to one another.
Or we may keep you locked up until the police arrive,
Shawcross added.
Come on, said Annalisa. Let's go inside. Then we can all introduce ourselves properly.
The two assembled groups headed over to the Big Dog restaurant and climbed a short flight of steps. The door was locked when they got there, but it seemed like something the other group were used to by now. Shawcross put through the window with a metal pole and cleared away the jagged shards from the edges of the frame.
Hope nobody minds climbing, he said. Doors aren't getting as much use these days.
Everyone hopped up onto the window ledge, one after another, and funneled through into the restaurant. It was very similar to how the Rainforest Cafe had been at the bottom of the hill, but a little better maintained.
Now, I haven't been in here for a while, Shawcross said. The amusement park and zoo is separate to the manor house of which I am in charge, but if memory serves me, there should be a soda fountain somewhere inside that we can use while there's still power. We should also gather as much water from the kitchen as we can.
Now that you mention it, said Nick, how come you guys still have power? It went off down below.
A generator, Annalisa explained. Shawcross said there's one that can power the park for a couple of days if the grid goes off.
Tell you the truth, I didn't even know it had kicked in. The power's out everywhere else then, I take it?
Nick shrugged. Not sure. It certainly went off down below. It set the alarms off.
So that's what it was. I thought I heard something last night.
Shawcross went and leant up against the bar.
Should we get the introductions out of the way? Then we can get on to more important matters.
Okay, Nick said. I've already introduced myself, but this big guy here is Jan, who, like I said, has already saved my life once. His companion is Rene, but he doesn't talk. This is Pauline, Nick continued to point around the group. Cassie, Eve, and Dave, the man answered for himself. I'm the one that got us all together in the first place.
Well done, Shawcross said. I am responsible for our own little group. You already know myself and Anna, but may I introduce you to Mike, Michelle, Greg, and Alan? There were more of us at one point, but, well... Everybody waved hello.
Should we be asking if anybody has any skills? Eve asked. That's what they do in the movies, right?
Shawcross scratched his chin. Oh, I suppose so. Annalisa would be our medic, for want of a better word.
I'm a vet, she said, but I know my way around human tackle too, more or less.
I'm a builder, said the moustached man called Alan. Retired.
I'm an accountant, said Michelle, an attractive blonde woman, so none of you need to worry about your tax returns.
Everyone giggled. Anyone else do anything useful? Shawcross asked. There was silence. Well, it doesn't seem that we're in a great position to restart civilization, so let's just hope things improve.
Some hope, thought Nick, as he took in his new surroundings. He wondered how long the dingy restaurant would end up being his new home. Don't think I'll get the sports channels here.
Shawcross pushed off from the bar and headed for Jan and Rene. The cellar is this way, he said. Are you both ready to settle in?
Jan shrugged.
After you, Warden.
Nick felt wrong as he watched Jan and Rene get led away to their imprisonment. He understood where the other group were coming from. He'd felt the same way about the prisoners not long ago. But he now felt like he owed the men. They were watching our backs the whole time from Dash.
Can we bring them food and water every day? Nick asked.
Of course, said Annalisa. It's just a precaution. We're not going to treat them like animals.
I think that's the soda machine over there.
Cassie was pointing across the room. Sure enough, there was a wide vending machine with a line of taps.
Okay, great, Annalisa said. Cassie, is it? Do you want to start filling up all the cups with soft drinks and water? That's unless you can find a way into the back of the machine. I imagine it's locked, though.
Cassie headed off, seemingly glad for something to do.
I'll help her, said Pauline, heading off after her.
And what are we going to be doing? Dave asked.
There was an irritated tone to his voice that suggested he wanted to be the one giving orders.
Annalisa sighed. I don't know, Dave. What would you like to do?
How about me and Nick go and root around the kitchen, see what food we can rustle up?
Nick shrugged. It seemed like a reasonable idea. He turned to Annalisa.
Would that be okay, Anna?
I suppose so.
Great. I'll get to work then.
Nick and Dave slid through a hinged entryway cut into the bar and headed through a staff door at the back. Inside was a woefully kept kitchen that had grime on the floor and grease on the walls.
Glad I never ate here, said Nick.
Nothing wrong with it, Dave argued. Dirtier the kitchen, the better it is. Bit of grease never hurt anybody.
Think we'll just have to disagree there.
Dave laughed and trotted forward. He reached out and grabbed a long bread knife from a wall hook. He let out a whistle.
Think I just found my weapon for the time being. You should grab something too.
Maybe later. I'm more interested in settling in with the new group first. I don't think arming ourselves to the teeth is going to put them at ease.
Arming ourselves is exactly what we need to do. That ginger tosser and the mouthy vet are going to be on our balls about everything if we let them. I'm not going to spend the whole time here being treated like a guest. This place doesn't belong to them, so why are they acting like it does?
Because they were here first, and we would be dead if they hadn't brought us up. I think we just need to take it easy and get along. They seem like nice people.
Yeah, maybe. I just don't fancy being defenceless if they decide to lock us up with the convicts. What the hell happened to Dash, by the way?
Long story. Now's not the time.
Well, like I said, I want to be ready if these new people start trying to strong-arm us. We're outnumbered once they lock up Jan and Rene.
I'm sure that won't happen, said Nick, still hoping that Jan and Rene would only be locked up temporarily.
They're just being sensible until they know us better.
Dave huffed.
You sure about that? Because all I know is that the world has changed. It's every man for himself now, and I see a return to tribalism.
Tribalism?
Yeah, tribalism. People are going to start looking out for their own. The strong will take what the weak have. The only question is, which side are you going to be on when the tribes begin to form?
Nick didn't like the sound of it.
He didn't like the thought of people turning on one another after so much had happened. But maybe that was the exact type of scenario when people were the most likely to stand for themselves.
I'm not picking sides, he said. I think we should all just stick together. If we don't, then we may as well feed ourselves to those monsters at the bottom of the hill.
Those monsters at the bottom of the hill are the reason why I'm right about us turning on each other. What are we going to do if there's a falling out or a disagreement or frustration when we all begin to starve? Nobody can go anywhere, so the only option left is to fight for your point of view. We're all going to be stuck on this hill together, and there's no longer the option for disagreement.
Nick blew air into his cheeks and then let it out in one big huff.
God, you're negative. You don't have a lot of faith in people, do you?
When you've been a bus driver for 20 years, the one thing you start to know well is people, especially desperate people with nothing to lose.
Okay, well, let's just play things by ear for now.
Of course, I'm just being prepared. Now, how about we go take a look in those fridges?
Nick glanced over at the refrigerator units and nodded.
Sounds good.
Inside, he was beginning to feel claustrophobic. Chapter 28. Annalisa didn't know what to make of the newcomers. Two of them were prisoners and one of them was a complete asshole, but Nick seemed to be on the level and the women in the group seemed to trust him. Still, she had a bad feeling that she couldn't quite put her finger on. She hadn't objected to Nick and Dave heading into the kitchen alone, but now she wondered if it had been such a good idea. She decided it would probably be wise if she went and joined them.
Keep my eye on them.
Before heading off, she glanced at Eve, Michelle, Greg and Alan. They were all standing around, aimlessly. They needed something to do. Maybe you lot can gather up the furniture and make some sort of living space. It might be worth us having a barricade as well, just in case, you know? The four of them nodded and got to work. Annalisa headed behind the bar and entered through the kitchen door. Nick and Dave were at the far end with their head in the fridges.
Found anything? She asked them.
Both of them spun round.
Nick answered, There's not much we can use, just some condensed milk and big jars of mayonnaise. Most of the food here is probably frozen.
Annalisa headed deeper into the room and pulled open a metal door against the far wall. She thought about the last time she'd opened a freezer unit and shuddered.
Hopefully this one won't be full of sick people.
Inside was plenty of food to keep them going, mostly burger patties, fries and frozen hot dogs, but also boxes of artificial cheese and other odds and ends.
Well, said Nick, it's not Michelin star, but it'll do.
Annalisa closed the door again and turned around. Best leaving it where it is for now. We'll have to make a list of it all and plan out rations.
I agree, said Dave. You're a clever girl, you, I can tell.
Thanks, she said. Must have been all those years at university.
So, what's next on the to-do list? Nick asked her.
We'll have to check with Shawcross. No doubt he'll have an opinion on what to do next, but to be honest, there's not a lot we can do other than wait.
When everyone is feeling up to it, we should start making a perimeter around the park, in case any infected people arrive.
Nick nodded.
Yeah, I like the sound of having fences between us and them. We should maybe look around for stuff to keep us warm as well. If the power goes off, it's going to get cold.
Good point. I'm not sure we're going to come across any blankets, though.
Let's get to it, then, said Dave. No point hanging around.
The three of them exited the kitchen and re-entered the restaurant. Michelle, Alan, Greg and Eve were moving the tables and chairs up against the windows and doors. They had also turned some sideways, creating private berths for people to lie down in. All in all, it was a job well done. Over at the far side, Cassie and Pauline were diligently filling up plastic cups with cola and placing them on the floor in rows. With a bit of luck, the machine would keep spitting out liquids for a while. People seemed a lot less tense when they were busy.
"Our guests are secure and comfortable downstairs," said Shawcross, who was marching towards them with Mike by his side. "Fortunately, the key to the cellar was still in the lock. You'll also be glad to know that there are several barrels of both soft drinks and beer down there. We will need to bring those up, of course. Can't leave them with the prisoners, lest they have themselves a party."
"Jan and Renee aren't like that," Nick protested.
Annalisa was glad that the prisoners were secure, but she did wish Shawcross would show a little more tactfulness in how he spoke about them. They were obviously well respected by Nick, and the man bristled every time his companion's morals were called into question.
Guess the big bearded guy really did save his life.
"We were planning to check out the perimeter," Annalisa told Shawcross. "See if we can reinforce our position."
Mike laughed. "We sound like bloody soldiers."
"Sooner we accept that we are, the better," said Dave. "I'm ready to go and check things out. Anybody want to join me?"
Annalisa didn't want the man to wander off alone, but she didn't want to be stuck with him either. "Mike," she said, "could you get Greg and Michelle and go with him? I think more heads will be better." He nodded.
"Sure thing. I'll get them now." "I'll start making an inventory of what we have," said Shawcross.
"Excellent," Annalisa said. It was a job she was hoping he would volunteer for. It would keep him busy and out of the way. She turned to Nick.
"Should you and I go and look for bedding material?"
"Sounds good to me," he said. "Let me just check in with Eve and the others so they know what's happening." Annalisa stood and waited while everyone separated. She watched Nick go over to each of the women in turn. He seemed to take responsibility for their welfare. She had a feeling, though, that he was just working hard to mask a deeper concern. Clearly, something was eating at him, and he was trying to make it go away by remaining busy.
Maybe he needs to talk to someone.
After a few moments, Nick returned to her. He was holding a pint of Coke and took a sip. Then he offered it to her.
"Hope you don't mind, but with all the excitement, it feels like I might faint if I don't take a drink."
She waved a hand.
"Hey, you're very welcome. We need to be tight with our supplies from now on, but you folks are more than entitled to a drink."
He lifted his arm in the direction of the window.
"Shall we?"
Annalisa nodded, and they both headed for the broken window that would take them outside.
"So," said Nick, "what's the deal here? Does all of your group work here?"
"No, actually, just Shawcross. I'm a vet that was on call here. Everyone else was staying in Ripley Hall for a company function."
"Really?
Wow. Do you think you'd be alive if you hadn't been called out here?"
"I doubt it.
Being here is probably the only reason I'm alive, if the news is anything to go by." Nick's eyes went wide. He helped her through the window quickly.
"You've seen the news? What did it say?"
"Not a lot. It went off soon after, but it was pretty clear that this is happening everywhere, all over the world." Nick jumped out of the window after her and let his gaze drop to the floor.
"Well, guess that's that then. This is the goddamn apocalypse, isn't it?"
Annalisa shook her head. It was crazy to use that word in a literal sense, but...
"Yeah, I'm pretty sure this is the end of the world as we know it. The news did say there was military in some places, but didn't say where, other than up north. Maybe if we hold out long enough, things will change."
"Let's hope so."
There was a brief silence as they walked along, and Annalisa took the opportunity to probe her new companion.
"I guess for some of us, it already feels like the world has ended."
Nick nodded and seemed to stare off into the distance.
"Pretty much."
"You said you had a wife and child?" Nick looked away from her.
"Yeah.
Deanna and James. They were both infected. I left Deanna alive, but James..." Annalisa put a hand on his back.
"It's okay. I get it. You don't have to say. I can't imagine what you went through. Although I pretty much can. I know what it's like to lose a child."
"But," she continued, "the people in your group seem pretty glad to have you around. Most people are infected or gone, so I guess we should try and count ourselves lucky that we're still here at all. At least that's what I keep telling myself. Only thing that's keeping me from going crazy, to be honest."
Nick glanced at her.
"So, did you lose anybody?"
"Yeah, I lost someone. But not because of all this. Guess I'm lucky that none of this horror has directly affected me like it has other people."
"I don't think anybody is lucky anymore.
I'm sorry for your loss, whenever it may have been. Annalisa smiled glumly. Thank you.
They came back to the Midway Games area and Nick came up with a suggestion. We could use the plush toy prizes as pillows. Some of them are pretty big and they look soft. Following the same train of thought, Annalisa had an additional suggestion. I think they sell wet weather ponchos in the gift shop too. They could be good for bedding.
Looks like we're on our way then. Let's get started.
Nick vaulted the basketball midway game and began pulling stuffed dinosaurs down off the shelves. He threw them out so that they landed in a loose pile on the pavement. Annalisa entered through the back of the Arabian Derby and started grabbing the biggest plush toys she could find. There would be more than enough to use as pillows.
We're going to need a bag or something to carry this stuff back, he shouted over to her. Any ideas?
The gift shop. It might sell tote bags.
Let's go check it out. We can look for the ponchos at the same time.
Nick vaulted back out of the basketball game and joined Annalisa on the pavement. She led him towards the gift shop and was grateful that she had once visited the park with her husband, back when they were courting. It was useful knowing her way around the theme park area of Ripley Heights. The gift shop was up ahead and themed like a fairy tale cottage. Nick picked up a rock from a nearby flower bed and let fly with it. It smashed out a window of the shop.
That's how you guys do this, right?
Annalisa laughed.
Nowadays we do. Gotta tell you, though, I really miss using doors.
I miss a lot of things, said Nick. I miss crap television and pop music.
Huh?
Nick looked at her.
What?
Nothing. It's just that those are the things I miss, too. Aren't you supposed to miss football and the pub?
Hey, way to stereotype me. I'm not really that kind of guy. I'm more wine and a movie at home with the wife.
At least, I used to be.
Come on, she said, changing the subject. Let's get inside.
They climbed through the broken window of the gift shop and headed inside.
Fantastic, she said, heading straight for a hanger full of souvenir hoodies. These should keep us all warm.
And here are the ponchos, said Nick, thumbing through a folded-up pile of plastic sheets. They've got souvenir towels over there as well.
And here are the tote bags.
Nick laughed.
Well, that was easy. Makes me wonder when something's going to go wrong.
There was an explosion. It shook the floor beneath them. But it came from far away. Both of Nick's eyebrows were stretched high, and Annalisa thought he looked a little like a shocked clown.
What the hell was that? He asked her.
She shook her head and chewed at the side of her mouth.
I don't know. We should go check it out.
She hopped back out through the window and told Nick to hurry after her. There were still aftershocks coming from whatever had exploded in the distance, and several continuing mini-explosions made it quite easy to pinpoint the direction. She headed towards the edge of the park, back to where the cable car station was located.
What are you going to do? Nick shouted after her. It's not like we can go down the hill to investigate.
Annalisa skidded on her heels as she headed around the park's magic carpet carousel and arrived at the cable car station. From there, she had an unobstructed view from the top of the hill to the landscape below. Nick bumped into the back of her. His jaw dropped open.
Hell's bloody bells. Hell is a good word for it.
Annalisa was holding her breath, and she suddenly let it out as the pressure in her lungs increased. In the distance, past the woods and forests that surrounded Ripley Heights, was a nearby village. Annalisa could just about make out the spire of a church there. The whole place was in flames, for at least a square mile. The fires blazed from 100 different sources. Some licked at the sky for hundreds of feet. As she scanned the horizon, she saw other distant villages ablaze also. It was as if the earth was burning.
It's all over, said Nick. Totally over.
Annalisa couldn't argue. Civilization was burning. For all she knew, they were the last human beings still left alive. And they were stuck on a hill, with nothing to do but await their own deaths.
What do you think is happening down there?
Annalisa asked Nick in a whisper. Shock would allow her to speak no louder.
I guess a petrol station went up or something. This whole area is pretty wooded. One place probably went up in flames and set the whole area on fire.
What if the fire makes it over here?
Nick sighed. Then I guess that'll be the end of the last safe place on Earth. Annalisa felt herself crying.
Doesn't feel so safe to me.
Chapter 29. Looking out at the blazing remains of civilization was a surreal experience. Common sense suggested that Nick should be on his knees, weeping and crying out in desperation, but all he found himself doing was staring. The level of horror was so high that something inside his brain kicked in. A defense mechanism designed to keep his mind calm, keep him sane amongst the insanity. Annalisa stood next to him and was staring with the same numb expression. Suddenly, she pointed something out.
Look, she said. They're moving away.
Nick looked down the hill at the car park. Like a herd of grazing buffalo, the massive horde of infected people had begun to turn around and face the direction of the flaming village on the horizon. A factory in the distance ignited and went up in a gulf of orange flame and obsidian smoke.
It's the explosions, Nick said. It's leading them away.
That makes sense. They operate off sight and sound. They're heading for all the noise. We might actually be about to catch a break here. Nick took one last look at the infected, funneling away into the distance, and then turned to look at Annalisa. Let's get what we need and tell the others. Okay, let's head back to the gift shop and load up the tote bags. Ready when you are. They headed back to the gift shop and got to work. They loaded up the tote bags with the plastic ponchos and hoodies. There was so much stock that they ended up looking like pack mules as they struggled to carry all of the tote bags. The last thing they gathered up were the plush toys from the Midway Games that they could use as pillows.
This should be more than enough, said Nick, peering over the top of his load.
Annalisa agreed, and they started to make their way back towards the restaurant. With the tote bags wrapped around both of his arms and a pile of plush toys balanced in front of him, Nick was having a tough time seeing. It made him think about how Deanna used to make fun of the way he would always be so determined to get all the shopping bags from the boot of the car to the house in one single trip.
Guess I haven't changed completely.
Up ahead, he heard rustling. It sounded like Annalisa was heading into the hedges that ringed the park's outer pathways. He was just about to ask her what she was doing when he heard her cry out. Nick dropped the bags he was carrying and looked around frantically. As he did so, he ended up treading on a stuffed dolphin. His ankle twisted and he cried out in pain. Annalisa was struggling on her back with an infected woman on top of her. There was a second infected person coming out of the bushes, a Chinese guy with broken spectacles.
Shit! What do I do?
Nick knew that if the Chinese man made it over to Annalisa, he would have no problem sinking his teeth into her as she struggled with the woman. Nick would have to take the man down first.
Here goes nothing.
With a rapidly swelling ankle, he lolloped towards the Chinese man and leapt into the air. He planted a sloppy flying kick in the best impression of Bruce Lee that he could manage. The man went stumbling backwards into the bushes, and Nick landed and hissed out in pain. He spun around to see that Annalisa had the infected woman around the throat and was trying to bring up her knees as a barrier between them. Nick went to help her. He grabbed the infected woman around the waist and tugged her backwards. At the same time, Annalisa kicked out her legs and struck the woman's abdomen. The extra momentum sent Nick reeling backwards to the floor, with his arms still wrapped around the woman's waist. He held on tightly as Annalisa hurried to her feet.
"Keep her there!" she shouted.
"Yeah, no problem," said Nick sarcastically.
Annalisa disappeared out of sight. The infected woman thrashed about in Nick's arms. He suddenly felt alone. Abandoned. Then Annalisa reappeared and dove at the infected woman in his arms. She swung her arm and cracked the woman across the face. Nick felt the body go limp and quickly dumped it to the side. He scurried back to his feet and saw that Annalisa held a jagged rock in her hand. It dripped with blood.
"Very effective," he said. "Think you can..."
Annalisa's eyes went wide. Nick was tackled from behind by the infected Chinese man. He fell to the floor face down and struck his head on the pavement. Immediately his vision dimmed and his hearing buzzed as though his ears were full of flies. He was hardly aware of what happened next as he lay on the floor impotently. Sounds of a desperate struggle ensued, but he was unable to do anything.
I need to help Anna. Or she needs to help me.
There was a wet sound. And then silence. Nick was still dazed when the struggling stopped. He wanted to roll onto his back and see what was happening, but every time he tried to move, a wave of nausea flooded over him. His head clanged like a kettle drum. I think I'm going to puke. A hand clamped down on his wrist and squeezed. The breath caught in his chest as he lay there, still powerless. Come on, Annalisa told him. I handled it. Nick blinked and tried to stop his vision from tilting. He took a few deep breaths before he was able to place his palms on the pavement and push himself up. Annalisa helped him to his knees, and then, slowly, onto his feet. He wobbled a bit and she grabbed a hold of him. Whoa, you okay? You took a pretty big bang on the head there. I can already see the swelling coming up.
I don't feel right.
His words trailed off as he saw the blood pouring from Annalisa's neck. He reached out a hand, but then stopped himself.
Her blood could be infected. Don't touch it.
Annalisa stepped away from his grasp and frowned. She followed his gaze and looked down at her shoulder. She saw the blood there, and her mouth dropped open.
Oh no, she said. No, no, no!
Nick stepped forward and put his hands on both her shoulders. Suddenly his headache was gone, replaced by trepidation and fear. He caught Annalisa's gaze and looked her dead in the eye.
Are you bit? He asked her.
But she didn't seem to hear the question and stared into space.
I said, are you bitten? I don't know.
Nick shook his head.
Damn it!
Annalisa began unclasping the buttons of her shirt and tugged the material away from her neck and shoulder. Nick leant forward to examine her wound.
Damn it, damn it, damn it!
There was a lot of blood. It was bright red and already clotting. It wasn't from a deep wound, but that wouldn't matter if it was from a bite. Nick followed the bleeding to its source until it became very clear what they were dealing with.
I can't believe it.
He stepped away from her and let out a sigh. Annalisa's eyes went impossibly wide.
What? She pleaded. Am I bitten?
Nick shook his head and stepped closer to her. He reached a hand around her neck and plucked something from a gash he had discovered on the back of her shoulder. Annalisa flinched.
Shit! What was that?
Nick held the sharp twig out in front of her and watched the relief take over her. He couldn't help but laugh with relief.
It was sticking right out of you. It was in pretty deep. But there's no bite.
Annalisa put her hand to her forehead and rubbed.
Thank God! I must have landed on it when the infected woman took me down to the ground. Jeez, that was close.
What were they doing up here anyway? He asked her, hoping she would have an answer. They must have followed you up in the cable car, she said. Climbed up the hill after you. Nick looked around anxiously, eyeing the tree line that surrounded the park and led down the hill.
You think there are more?
Annalisa shrugged. I bet there are more in the trees, but if we get out of sight they should all head back down towards the village with the others. These two must have been nearby when the explosions happened. They probably already had us in their sights. Nick looked down at the scattered items they had been carrying back to the restaurant. Then he looked back up at Annalisa. I think that once we get all this stuff back, our only priority for now should be getting this place secure. The infected may be heading away for now, but I'm sure more will come by eventually. Annalisa nodded her head, staring at the ground as she thought about things. We need to make this place a fortress. Either that, said Nick, or we need to start watching our backs every second. Chapter 30. Almost 3 weeks had passed since the decision was made to dig in 500 feet above the ground.